Good morning. It's Wednesday, August 7th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, understanding the landmark monopoly ruling against Google, the Nobel Peace Prize winner who will now lead Bangladesh after weeks of deadly violence, and the women of Team USA earn another shot at Olympic soccer gold. But first, Democrats are rallying around their presidential ticket, Kamala Harris and her new running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. He made his first campaign appearance last night alongside Harris at a rally in Philadelphia.
Thank you, Madam Vice President, for the trust you put in me, but maybe more so, thank you for bringing back the joy.
The Trump campaign quickly went after Walz. Vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance spoke at another rally in Philly.
Tim Walz's record is a joke. He's been one of the most far-left radicals in the entire United States government at any level. But I think that what Tim Walz's selection says is that Kamala Harris has bent the knee to the far left of her party, which is what she always does.
As a governor, Walz checks a lot of boxes on the progressive wish list. He signed abortion rights and access to reproductive health care into law. He legalized recreational marijuana, committed to making Minnesota a 100% clean energy state by 2040, and signed a bill providing free school meals for children. Though some on the left didn't like that he resisted pressure to defund the police after the murder of George Floyd in his state. Instead, he maintained funding and approved a series of police reform measures.
Tim Walz is a great person. My experience with him has been that he has been a moderate Democrat in the Congress.
That's former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who's been seen as extremely influential over the past few weeks on Biden stepping down. Yesterday, I sat down with her just hours after the news broke that Walz was joining the ticket. First, let me say, she told me she had nothing to do with this choice.
I kept out of the selection for vice president.
But she has known Walz a long time. She publicly supported him when he ran for Congress in 2006, a race he ultimately won, turning that seat blue. And she says he can speak to middle America with authority and authenticity.
He has been the chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee. He has been for 24, 25 years, a member of the National Guard, the longest serving non-commissioned officer to serve in the Congress, in the history of the Congress. He was a teacher, he was a coach, took his team, which had not done so well before, to the state championships. What you see is what you get with Tim Walz.
We also spoke about her new book, The Art of Power, and about the state of politics and the Democratic Party today. Well, Speaker Pelosi, you recently demonstrated your power when, at least as media reports it, you got Biden to step aside and not seek re-election. Now, Biden once said, if the Lord Almighty told me to step down, maybe I would. And I have seen the joke. I guess that means that Nancy Pelosi is the Lord Almighty. I don't know if you've heard that one. But I've heard you in a few interviews now kind of deflect questions about what happened behind the scenes. But I want to press you on this and just ask, why not say more? Say more about what kinds of conversations took place. I think a lot of Americans feel like they want the transparency. They want to understand how these kinds of huge decisions are made.
Well, the president made his own decision. Some in the press were saying I was burning up the phone lines, calling people. I didn't call one person. I didn't even call him, but the press said I called him. But I did speak with him. But a conversation with the president is a confidential matter, by and large, especially when it involves his decision-making in such an important way. So there will come a time for that. But right now, the point is, I stayed in Congress to help win the Congress for the Democrats and to make sure that we would elect a Democratic president. I see Donald Trump as a menace to our democracy. I see him a person of no integrity, no values, no vision for the future. All I was pleading for was a stronger campaign because I did not see a campaign that could prevail against his misrepresentations, his endless money, and that could have an impact on the House and Senate the House has always been my responsibility. So I'm determined that we will win the House. Hakeem Jeffries will become Speaker of the House. We need a bigger, stronger campaign coming at the presidential level. The president made the decision that that would happen by his stepping aside.
But you said you did speak with him. Did he seek your counsel, your advice on what to do?
I don't know that I would say he sought it, but in any event, I love the president. He's been my friend for over 40 years.
Well, let me ask you this. Now that the energy has really shifted, I think many Democrats would like to leave the sort of chaotic, unsure chapter behind the immediacy of what things were like right when Biden announced he wouldn't seek re-election. But the fact is the party was in serious trouble just before Biden's announcement. Biden made his decision. And it's easy to celebrate the change in energy now. But can you speak to what went so wrong to land the Democrats in that position in the first place of trying to convince a poor polling president to step aside?
I don't think that that's trouble. I think we're the Democratic Party. We have different points of view, and we work through them. We're not a monolithic party. We're not a lockstep party. Our party is 70%, and this I take great pride in, 70% women, people of color, LGBTQ. 70%. To say that about a congressional party is remarkable, the beautiful diversity of it. So I don't agree with that characterization. I think disagreement is a sign of strength, not of weakness.
You are 84 years old yourself.
Mm-hmm.
President Biden is 81. Do you think that there should...
Donald Trump is 78?
Yes,
correct. Well, we're leading him out of this conversation?
No, correct, okay. Correct.
Yeah.
Do you think there should be an age where we ask elected officials, people running for office, even Supreme Court justices to step down?
No, I don't think so. I think age is a relative thing. I think being Italian gives me a lot of energy. Eating dark chocolate every day does too. But I feel very energetic. But I'm not here because I don't have alternatives. I'm here because I don't want Donald Trump to become president of the United States, and I want the Democrats to take back the Congress.
You can hear more of my interview with Speaker Nancy Pelosi a little later on this week on Apple News in Conversation, in the Apple News app and in the podcasts app. Let's turn now to Google and the landmark decision from a federal judge this week who said the company's search product is illegally using its monopoly status to squash competitors. Lauren Feiner, senior policy reporter with The Verge, has been following this case for years.
This case centered around Google's agreements with both phone manufacturers and browser makers to be the default search engine on their devices.
The core accusation from prosecutors at the Department of Justice was Google went around its competition by maintaining these exclusive deals with companies to make Google Search the default option on their browsers. Apple is one of those companies. According to the DOJ case, Google paid Apple an estimated $19 billion each year to be the default search engine on the iPhone. Prosecutors argued those contracts blocked potential Google rivals like Microsoft's Bing and DuckDuckGo from competing.
While it's possible to change the default search engine on your phone or on your browser, the government showed that a lot of people really don't do that. And that effectively just drives this feedback loop for Google, where it keeps getting consumers coming back to it and keeps getting their data to keep making its service better and harder to compete with.
It's not illegal to be a monopoly, but prosecutors argue that Google's monopoly status allowed it to charge advertisers artificially high prices, and that Google faced little pressure to invest time and money into improving the quality of its search engine, which prosecutors say harmed consumers. Throughout the trial, Google argued its search engine is so successful simply because it's the best on the market.
And that's why consumers choose to come to it time and again.
And Google says it does have competition, pointing to platforms like Reddit, TikTok, Amazon, and ChatGPT. The company plans to appeal. Feiner told us not much will change for Google users as a result of this decision, or at least not right now.
there's still a lot that's left to happen in this case. Maybe this makes it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And so we're talking on a years-long time frame, but we'll get a little bit more information after the remedies phase of what Google might have to do to change its business to comply with the court ruling.
The judge could decide to force Google to change the way it runs Google search or sell off parts of its business. This was a major win for the Justice Department. It's the biggest antitrust case in tech in decades since Microsoft was ordered to break up its business back in 2000. And Finer says she also wouldn't be surprised if this case spurs more legal action.
And I think this will embolden the government to say, okay, there is a path here to pursue monopoly charges against big tech companies.
Before we let you go, a few other stories that'll stick with you in the Apple News app. Another congressional critic of Israel has lost a primary. Missouri Representative Cori Bush was defeated by Wesley Bell yesterday. Bush was an early and strong critic of Israel's attacks on Gaza. Pro-Israel groups spent millions opposing her in the race. The primary was similar to a recent one in New York, where incumbent Democratic Congressman Jamal Bowman lost. He also faced a similar onslaught of millions in spending by pro-Israel groups. Bangladesh has a new leader following weeks of protests where more than 300 people died. The movement led to Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina stepping down. Nobel Peace Prize-winning economist Muhammad Yunus will now lead an interim government. CNN spoke to him after Hasina's exit.
Well, we feel relieved that she finally resigned and left the country. People are celebrating on the street, and millions of people all over Bangladesh celebrating as if this is our Liberation Day.
Yunus was chosen after talks that included the president, the military, and student protest leaders. He's best known for developing microlending, basically tiny business loans for low-income people who wouldn't normally qualify for a typical bank loan. His work has been credited with helping many people out of poverty. He accepted the new role from Paris, where he's advising Olympic organizers on how to make the games more socially responsible. And very quickly, on the Olympics, the U.S. women's soccer team is set to play for a gold medal. They defeated Germany 1-0 yesterday in a match that went into extra time. That means Saturday they face Brazil. The Americans are undefeated since new coach Emma Hayes took over in May. Team USA is already the most decorated team in Olympic history. If they win this year, it'll be a fifth gold medal. There's other Olympic coverage and much more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Texas Monthly spent nearly a year investigating the state Senate, and it found a toxic culture, which suppressed allegations of sexual harassment and misconduct for years. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.